session number 18045, Reel 5.
Been commanding us, but we didn't want to come under a brand new CEO that had nothing to do with it, you know. But it was a very short period, and Paddy walked in. And so, you know, nothing had happened.
What sort of operations were done during that period? I mean, what theatre operations were done in that period?
SRS, well, we trained up. Paddy got back, we trained up and did the Sicilian invasion. Right. So we did Mare di Porco, where we did the guns, got back on the boat, which was the Ulster Monarch we were using, and that was fitted up with a flat-bottom boat, and went straight into Augusta, where they said, don't bother about too much ammunition, they've surrendered, it's just a matter of making a landing. And we sailed into the harbour in the Ulster Monarch, and as the Ulster Monarch came to a halt, the Jerry's opened up. They thought we were a decoy, and we didn't know the Jerry's were there, and they opened up, and their minimum shells were going right over the top, the Ulster Monarch. So we were in a flat bottom boat, so we went ashore, and we had quite a lot of casualties there in Augusta. From Augusta, we went to a place called...
Could you go back one? Sorry. What was the first raid on the Sicily operation? That was...
The gun position.
That was by the lighthouse, was that
Mare di Porco, yeah.
Could you tell me about that one?
Well, the object of that was to... It was the gun emplacement, and the object was to go and destroy the guns so that the invasion fleet could get in to Sicily. And it was a piece of cake, because things went wrong all the way through. We landed at the wrong time. If we had landed at the right time, we'd have been bombed by the RAF and Strath. So that worked out right. And as we were going in on that one, you read that in the magazines you've got?
Yeah.
The Elite. And as we were going in, they dropped a para brigade, and they dropped most of them, 90%, in the sea. The Yanks had dropped them off too quick, and they were all dying in the sea, draining, and we couldn't do nothing. We went straight through them in the old flat-bottom boat, and by morning, we destroyed every gun, blown every gun up, and we had no casualties.
How were we able to do that?
Well, because the RAF had done such a good job and there were no Germans there, and they'd done such a good job of strafing and bombing, they were all under the ground. They didn't want to know. We were getting them out of these places. We did the guns up, and we were getting them out from dungeons, and we recaptured a brigadier and about 11 people from the para, which I think were the only ones that landed on the land that had been captured.
Which
it was a hell of a cock up the Yanks, you know.
That was the major Sicily landings you were trying
So we did a hell of a job, because had they been, they'd have sunk a lot of shipping with the great big guns. I've got the photograph there that I gave to Elite, you know, the thing we were briefed on that.
Right.
And it was so good, the briefing, that when you got ashore in the boat, you went up the cliff, you thought you'd been there before. Because briefings came as a hell of a lot, you know. And then from there, as I say, we got back on the boat, Augusta, where we had a hell of a battle there, not as SAS, it was more infantry. Then we did a landing in a place called Bagnara, which is right down on the bottom of Italy. We were the first in on Italy. And from there...
How did that operation go, that landing?
It was mostly bloody infantry fighting, you know. It wasn't SAS at all, it was war infantry. And the last one was at a place called Termini, up on the east coast. Again, mostly infantry stuff. And then, thank God, we were pulled back from there to the UK.
Why do you say thank God?
Well, because we weren't being used right, you know. It was just infantry fighting, you know, landing and sort of half command, now half infantry, you know, it wasn't that, so yes. And he was after me in a big way, because I'd been out with a girl and he pinched her or
excuse
something.
Excuse me, are you gentlemen drafted at all? Not big expense at the back that blows in.
And, we're back at Chelmsford and he's after me, you know, Johnny. So when we used to go out in the evening, we used to go down to Chelmsford and get a few pipes and come back. We used to go in the sergeant's mess kitchen and see what was going and cut a bit, you know. So I came out this morning, Johnny said, you're up in front of the CO, which was Paddy Maine, isn't it? So I go in front of Paddy, and Paddy said, you charge with stealing £28 of beef from the sergeant's mess kitchen, you see? He said, I don't understand. He said, Sergeant Major of mine being brought in. He said, I don't understand this. You know, he couldn't get over it. So he said, what have you got to say? I said, sir, if you can get £28 of meat into between two slices of bread, I said, I'm guilty. Get out! That was Paddy. Get out
there. When I've gone up the road,
okay, not up now. Okay, well, no thanks, my love, no.
So after you won SS, well, sorry, after SRS was pulled out of Italy, and you went back, came back to England, or to Britain, and then you were reformed as one SAS.
That's, yeah, built up, yeah.
Right. And who was in charge? And Paddy was still in charge?
Paddy was still CO, CO.
Right.
Right up until it finished. Paddy remained CO until the day it was disbanded.
Right.
Well then, I didn't, as I told you, I didn't take part in the French thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing to do with France. I think Reg is the bloke to see on France, the man you're seeing tomorrow,
Fraser
McCluskey. They're two you should see on the France. But the next thing I went into was the Europe thing, crossing the Rhine and right up.
Why were you not involved in France? Were you?
Well, I went to headquarters squadron for a rest, you know. Yeah. They made me sergeant major of headquarters squadron. I think they said, well, you know, I think Paddy said, well, he's done his bit, you know, take a rest period. So I went to headquarters squadron.
How aware were you of the thing, the incident with Bill Sterling at that time? How aware were you of the row with Bill Sterling had when he refused to use them as an ordinary infantry lot?
That, I forget when that was.
That must have been around about D-Day, just after. But that was two.
Oh, that would have been back. They must have been back in. That must have been the period then when the first was at Chelmsford, and the second, who Tom Burke was a quartermaster.
Right.
Were at Wivenhoe.
Yes.
So that must have been that period.
Right.
Yeah. And when Brian France took over.
Right.
That's it. Yeah. I thought it was before that, Gordon. That he'd...
Might have been.
I thought it was during... no, it would have been. It would have been the last part of Italy. Would have then coming back, wouldn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, they'd come back to... Wivenhoe, and I don't know whether Bill Sterling was still in command then of second, or whether Brian had taken over, you know.
Right.
Tom could tell you that.
I'll check
Tom
on that.
Tom Clerk, yeah.
And Roy Farron as well would have been.
Oh, and Roy Farron, oh yeah.
Mm.
Another man you want to get hold of is Alistair McGregor.
Right.
He's absolute 9 carat, he's 22 carat gold, McGregor. Now, he's a man that when I was in Greece, I told you, he was reading that book, Winged Dagger, and he knew him and Matt Farron were very close. And he got hold of the book and slung it right across this room we were in. He said, one of those old bollocks, slung it like that. And I don't think he had any time for Farron at all. But you meet him. Now, Alistair McGregor was the man that I was in Greece with after the war, and he came out on the, we were together on the reform of the B squadron, because there were only three regulars in that.
Right.
That was Alistair McGregor, myself, and a chap named Carson, and all the rest of the officers and men were from 21 SAS.
Right.
So get hold of Alistair, he's a good man, and he'll give you plenty of gen. He's the SOMC. He'll give you plenty of gen on second. He's one of the best that you can, best people you can contact there on second. Right.
I'll do that. So picking up your story again.
Oh, well, my story then from later on, Paddy Main sent for me and he said, so you're going to D Squadron. And I knew D Squadron was his pet squadron. They were Irish.
Mm.
Paddy was Irish, as you know. And the last squadron I wanted to go to was D Squadron. So, Christ, you know. Anyhow, I went to D Squadron and went off to, we crossed the Rhine at Wiesel and we worked our way, as you read from that magazine, you know, from the elite, right up to Kiel. And they were terrific soldiers, but they were uncontrollable out of action, you know, not uncontrollable, but they were a pain in the neck when they were out of action, but they were terrific soldiers.
How was D Squadron operating during that time? I mean, you were in jeeps, obviously.
Army jeeps, yeah. We just advancing, and we were in front of the army most of the time, you know. You get a good account of it in that elite thing. And we were the first in the Bolson concentration
camp. Can you tell me about that day again?
Well, what happened there was the whole of the army had passed it, and we got a signal to go back to this map reference, and it was Balsam. We went into Balsam, we saw the pit where they made them crawl to, you know, when they were dying. We saw that pit full of bodies. We got hold of Kramer, whatever you call him, and Irma Grease, and this chap, Bob Gunning, who was one of my corporals, he took the ring off of his finger. Great big gold ring, and on the inscription inside was from Himmler to Kramer. And Irma Grease was taking the mickey, and the same chap got him, went up and belted her the same, you belt a man, it's on the chin. And while we were in there, the Germans were still shooting political prisoners in vast camp, and they were shooting people, but we couldn't do anything about it, you know, it was too vast. And we came from there.
And you stayed then until the rest of the army arrived, or you went on then?
No, the rest of the army came round. And a chap who I went to school with the Oxford and Bucks, was one of them that was put on the perimeter, a chap named Jim Stevenson. And he said, God's truth, Jim, I hadn't seen him since I left school, you know. And they put the army round it, and they sent the doctor, and we moved on, you know, we went up and finished up at... up at Kiel, when I was told you this tale about Kiel.
Can you tell me again for the transcripts the Kiel story?
Oh, the Kiel thing. Well, we were about 60 miles south of Kiel, and we were using German farm houses, hiding the jeeps, etc. And we got John Tonkin, who was a major, got a signal that we'd go off in the morning and go to Kiel, which was about 60 kilometres off. And we knew nothing about the war being over, anything like that. This was about a week before the official closing of the war. And off we went in the armoured jeeps next morning. We sensed something was wrong, because that we weren't being attacked or anything. And our mission was to take some people from T Force, which was a force, one of these funny business forces, into Kiel, and meet Donetz, And, you know, the war was over. And we drove right into Kiel with hardly any opposition, right in the middle of Kiel to the German naval headquarters. And John Tonkin and Captain Ryden went up to with the specialist chap, naval chap, I think it was. And all of a sudden, John Ryden, all my boys were looking around in the jeeps, you know, let's say where we start having a little bit of loot, you know. And down came John Ryden, and he said, "For God's sake, Sergeant Major," he said, "don't start nothing." He said, "They don't know anything about the war being over in there." Oh, I said, "Here we are in the middle of Kiel. This is lovely, you know." Well, it was thrashed out between John Tonkin and this person we were carrying and Donut that the war was over. But he said, "If you want to go across that bridge, the SS hasn't packed up yet." So we didn't go over the bridge, but we did go.
So did Donut surrender on that occasion, or was that delayed to a more formal occasion?
No, more formal.
Right.
No, that was just the initial and more formal. And
but is it possible that some agreement was come?
Oh, there was an agreement come to there with John Tonkin and Donuts. Yeah, there was definitely agreement. I think the agreement was such as, okay, I accept it, but the SS hasn't accepted it yet.
Is that in Strawson's book? One of the things, talking about the Falklands, was that the first flag raised over Port Stanley was an SAS flag. It was only later on that they raised the powers and the marine
flag.
Well,
that'd be sort of the same thing, wouldn't it?
Exactly the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was possible that the piece was arranged that day.
That was arranged that day, but because he couldn't answer for the SS.
Right.
And then we made our way to the Kiel Canal, and we saw this ship trying to get off, and we shouted, and it took no notice. So we opened up with the old Vickers guns, and they brought the ship back in. And as I told you, that they, two Norwegians came up to me, and apparently the Germans had been taking these political prisoners out to the Kiel Canal and chaining them and throwing them overboard all the morning. We got orders to go make our way back to what port would it be?
Have I had a coffee or a tea?
Belgium.
Fine, if you want.
No, I'm all right, thanks.
I'm okay on this, thank you.
Sure.
We got orders to go back to what would have been a port?
Ostend?
Ostend.
Yeah.
To Ostend, and we drove from Kiel, and about the next day, we were about 12 miles outside Brussels, and we were sitting in a cafe, and Churchill, we heard it on the radio, that the war was officially over. So it had been over before then, you know, but that's when we caught, and so that was it, straight into Brussels with the armoured jeeps to celebrate. You never saw anything like it. The jeeps driving into the bars, never mind walking in, driving up to the bars.
What did the people feel like when you heard that message on the, obviously you knew it was coming anyway, but you know, Churchill's message over the radio?
No, it still came as a shock. You know, it we were sitting there having this coffee or a drink, and Churchill came over, and it still shook us, you know. Well, I can't remember whether it shook us in the fact that we knew it was over. We'd known a couple of days before, you know. But it was terrific, because we said, right, 12 kilometres Brussels. Didn't we have a night in Brussels? And then we came back on the boat, loaded with loot. Shotguns. I tell you now, the other night, I'd been worth about £40,000 a day for the cap of 12. I had a gave a lot away. Beautiful German shotgun. But And as we got back to, don't put this for publishing, but as we got back on this tank landing craft, so the old front was coming down and all these jeeps were sitting there revving up, and as soon as it touched down, the old customs were outside. Zoom! The whole regiment led by Paddy May straight off. There was hounds of play over it. He was pulled up about it. Oh, he's up on the carpet. Well, because he had more loot than anyone. Paddy made a bomb of money.
But they're saying that out in Ireland, he got his family out of trouble with that money.
I know, he got a load of them.
When he was over in Ireland, they told me that herself.
Oh, yeah.
The civilians.
The doctor. His panniers were filled with silver foxworms from Norway.
What was Fraser McCaskey's filled with?
Oh, see, Fraser was straight enough, yeah. Poor old Fraser.
No, nice old man.
He's a lovely man.
Lovely man.
Tell me about the story you were telling about Paddy was actually moving between the various sections. And the night that you took over a pub or whatever.
Oh, that was in Germany, yeah. No, he was going around the different squadrons.
Yeah.
And we had the info that he was coming up to D squadron. And we're in this little village, and John Tonkin said, Paddy's coming up with Fraser. He'll remember it, Fraser McCluskey. And so we tipped all these Germans out of this place upstairs, and a bar, and took the bar over, and we filled a bath, a great big galvanised bath, with the hooch, which was all colours of the world. Snaps, all of it. Green and blue and pink and... They filled a great big galvanised bath up, got a piano in, because he's a beautiful pianist, Fraser McCluskey. And they came up and we had this terrific evening, you know. Terrific. And old Fraser McCluskey was sitting there playing that piano, and all these terrible Irish chaps of mine were getting drunker and drunker, you know. And hitting him on the back and saying, don't have him play that. And, okay, Paddy, you were saying that was a great, wonderful man.
He's nice man.
He won out of the...
All the ladies liked him.
Oh, yeah, terrific. Good looking man.
Lovely looking man, I'm not going to say.
He's got very old now.
Yeah, I know. It's the what's the name's got age, but he was about... Go back into the 50s, Ben. He was a really handsome man, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Beautiful features.
Where were you in relation to the front line at that stage?
We were always in front, Gordon. Right. Always advanced. In fact, we were working with the Inns of Court, that later I worked at the Inner Temple, and then I realised why they were bad soldiers. You know, when I worked at the Inner Temple and found out what they were like, those barristers, they couldn't make a soldier face trust. But we were working with this Inns of Court. I'd never heard of them. They had the armoured cars, you know, and they wouldn't go in front. We did all with the open jeeps. We were doing all the advanced stuff. They were shockers, and they got one of their chaps shot in Lofty Collier. Yeah. Now that you saw last year, big Jim Collier. Jim and me went up and got the poor chap back. He had been badly wounded. They all done a nip. Do you know when you put these other regiments, and I'm not, this is no kid ball, you put them against SAS, and Dave Kershaw will tell you that, because when he lost his leg, he said, Bob, he said, I went to that para regiment. He said, they're a shower. Oh, he said, I was disgusted.
He
said, mangers jumping down in ditches, hiding.
He praises the Germans on that.
He said, he said, SAS, there's nothing, and I quite agree, because anyone I've soldiered with, they've been a complete waste of time. The Hampshire regiment. They were in Sicily. I think the Hampshires and another regiment, all they did was loot air kit out in Italy. But that Inter Courts, they were very bad. That never I said to no one when we got to the temple, no one of the Inter Courts.
Was that Chancery Lane, weren't they, Benny?
Chancery Lane, their headquarters, yeah.
Chancery Lane, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to sit as I walked
by
with a dog.
What was it like in Germany at that stage? I mean, what was it like going to Kiel, and what was happening around you on the streets? And I mean,
everyone saying they didn't believe in Hitler. Every house we went into, they said we don't want Hitler. And you saw a great big picture of him in every house you went in.
Was it very badly bombed?
One village now is another. Is you see a thing that people don't, you know, SAS, we know there's a tough side, but we were ordered to surround a village in Germany. I can't tell you where it was now. D squadron to attack at dawn. So we got the jeeps all round the village, and in at dawn we went in. There's supposed to be a load of SS there. And when we got in, all we found was a load of starving women and kids. And no men whatsoever. And this Irish squadron of mine, the Irish boys, were taking bully beef, rations, biscuits off of the jeeps and giving it to the women and kids. I say that's the type of people they were.
Yeah.
They weren't short themselves.
Yeah.
If it would have been SS, they'd have shot them on the sight. But women and kids was a different thing, you see. Yeah, it's fantastic, really. But it was a bit pitiful because then every German you went to, you know, Nixfastein, Hitler, Nixfastein, all this rubbish, you know. So what's that picture doing up there? So we used to go, the big farmhouses were lovely because we used to go straight in, and you know the big chimneys they had? Straight under the chimney. Get the hams down, you know, big hams. Yeah, they had plenty of food on the farms, and but the rest of them were in a very poor state. And of course, the SS type was still that they didn't alter. I told you about Duncan Midler, didn't I? Up at, on that in Germany, we went into this place. And a big camp, and a load of these prisoners had got off of a boat and had come ashore. And I'm walking down through this camp. That's another chap to me, Duncan Midler. And he's very interesting because he holds some diaries as well, because Duncan was intelligence.
R-I-D-L-E-R.
Yeah.
Right.
And this German naval officer started shouting, you know, and I called Duncan Ridler. And I said, who was the intelligence sergeant? And I said, what's he talking about, you know? And Duncan said, well, we go down here. So we went in the first door we saw, you see. And there were some Germans playing cards. And they all looked at this CO, you see, got an arm cross, first class up here. Looked at him, of course they scarped, they couldn't get out quick enough. So I sat down, not speaking any German. And Duncan Ridley's chatting to this naval officer who was a camp commandant. And all of a sudden the German laughed, and Duncan pulled his iron cross off and his ribbon, his medals and his rank. And thumped him. And I thought, what's going on here? And Duncan said after that this chap said he was afraid of these people in the camp because the married quarters would be catching diseases. So Duncan just said, well, you're the man that's made them diseased. You're the country and you're the people that have done it. He said, now I'm a British sergeant and you're a German, whatever you are. He said, so stand to attention and call me sir. And then when the bloke grinned and he whipped the whole lot off. So have a talk with Duncan on that.
What sort of camp was that? That would have been
a what?
You said
what concentration.
No, it was not a concentration camp. No, it was a military camp. Must have been naval because this man was naval. But you asked Duncan on that one. Because they never did alter. Those people, they was arrogant as when they started. Yeah. Yet some of them you couldn't admire. I mean, you couldn't help but admire. We captured a chap.
I think so.
I told you about capturing the doctor.
Yeah.